what we're going to look at today is the Chassam Sofer, and that you'll see on the top right. He also has written, has authored a Psicha to Mukta.
This is from the Tifta, isn't it?
This is not from the Tifta.
No,
the Tifta has something called Otzer, which I can show you later. I didn't get a chance to see what he has on books. I'm sure he has plenty of pages.
So where is this from?
This is from an internet site called Timnati. If you'd like, after the Shia, we could talk about it. I just want to use, you know, the 1 hour that we have. I just want to, you know, use it for its maximum, because I really want to make some progress both here on this psicha and also on the Gemara and Daf Mem Dalet Amud Aleph. Now, a lot of the background and the fundamentals of Muktzah are in Masechta Beitza, and that's where the Chassam Sofer decided to write his introduction to Beitza and an overview of Muktzah. And what we spoke about yesterday, which is the major breakthrough of the Chassam Sofer, is the difference between Mukta L'Achila and Mukta L'Tiltul. And the Chassam Sofer establishes, based on many different sugyas, but primarily the beginning of Beitza, that the Isra Achila of Mukta is derived from the Pasuk Ve'ichinu Es Asher Yaviu in Parshas B'Shalach. The Torah requires Hachana for Shabbos, for Yontif. And in the case of Mukta, as far as Achil is concerned, you must have Hachana. And in the absence of Hachana, it becomes Asur B'Achila. And the Chassam Sofer proves that Achila means anything but Tiltul, meaning any use that you have. So we're going to soon discuss a case where he has logs, and he wants to use them for his fire, for his campfire. And that too comes under the Isra Achila. So don't get confused here. And we have to emphasize this and re-emphasize this when we talk about Achila. Achila means any sort of use of the object, as opposed to just relocating the object, which is called Tiltul. Says the Chassam Sofer, Hachana is a requirement for use. Anything you want to use on Shabbos, on Yontif, needs Hachana. That Hachana has to take place on Erev Shabbos, on Erev Yontif. Then, that's as far as the Torah is concerned. The Torah says, Ve'ichinu es asher yaviv. Then comes Nehemiah in history, much later on in history, and it's recorded here in the Gemara Daf Kuf Chav Gimel, and he introduces an Isa Tiltul Muktzah. The Torah doesn't know of it on an Isa Tiltul Muktzah. The Torah only knows of use, that you have to prepare something for use. In the absence of that preparation, you're not allowed to use it. But if you're not using it, but you're just moving it, that's already a Gzera Derabbanan, which was instituted at the time of Nehemiah. It went through many different stages, the Gemara says. Initially, Nehemiah said you're not allowed to move any kelim whatsoever. And all this was because you're not allowed to take these kelim and bring them out into Rishu Sarabim. And Nehemiah was afraid because there was a lot of, you know, there's a lot of zilzul in Melechus Shabbos, and especially in Melechus Otzai. He was afraid that if you start moving kelim, basically Nehemiah only allowed you to move three kelim, you know, three kelim that are absolutely necessary for Achila. And then later on, he loosened the belt and he allowed other kelim and so forth. So that's as far as Tiltul is concerned. So again, we have to always keep in mind this major fundamental breakthrough of the Chassam Sofer. There's Shimush. We're not allowed to use something that's mukta because it's lacking in hachana. And then there's Tiltul. Tiltul is a much later gzera. It's not based on the pasuk in Chumash of Eichinu Es Asher Yaviu. That's the Isu Tiltul. Now, where is mukta in Shas? It's the Mishnah at the beginning of Masechta Beitza. And we're talking about Beis Hillel. Beis Hillel say that if an egg was laid on Yontif, then lo teochel, you cannot eat it. And the Gemara offers an explanation. Why does Beis Hillel assume that you're not allowed to eat a beitza that was born, that was laid on Yontif? And the Gemara quotes Rabbah. So Rabbah is our man today. And Rabbah says that because the pasuk says Ve'chinu es asher yaviu, anything that lacks hachana mib'od yom beforehand, is asr. You're not allowed to eat it. And in this case, Rabba says there's a very specific reason why the hachana of Erev Yontif would not be meaningful on Yontif to be matir Yisrachila, and that is because we're talking about Yontif on Yom Rishon. So when Yontif falls on the first day of the week, then we have a principle called Ein Shabbos Mechin Lechol, Ein Shabbos Mechin LeYontif. You're not allowed to enjoy the benefit of Hachana from Shabbos onto Yontif. And since the egg that was laid today was prepared yesterday, and since Yontif now is on Yom Rishon, therefore it was the Shabbos that prepared for this Beitza, you're not allowed to eat the Beitza. And Rashi goes out of his way in Masechta Beitza, at the very beginning of the Masechta, to point out that according to Rabba, we're dealing with an Isur Doraisa, which is derived from this Pasuk Veichinu. And the Pasuk Veichinu tells me that Chol could be Mechin, but not Shabbos. Now, if Chol could be Mechin and not Shabbos, you might ask, first of all, what about the Mishnah that says Beitza Shanol de Beyantif, Beisil Omrim Lo Teochel? Beisil was not addressing the case of Yontif Shechalios Achara Shabbos. Beisil made an absolute blanket statement that any Beitza that's Nold on Yontif is awesome. So how do we understand the classical case of Beitza Shenolda B'Yontif? Yontif coincided with Yom Sheni, Yom Shlishi, Yom Revi, whatever day of the week. And the answer is that you cannot prepare something that doesn't exist in the world. That's called Nolat. And this egg doesn't exist in this world until it's laid. So until the point of Leda, we don't have any possibility of doing hachana. Now watch what happens over here. We've got two different categories of, we'll call it mukta. We have one category in the case where Yontif falls out on Yom Rishon. And that category tells me that because it says Veichinu Esesher Yaviu, and now the hachana was on Shabbos, the Ein Shabbos Mechin LeYontif, that's an Isa Doraisa to eat the egg on Yom Rishon on Yontif. The Gemara asks then, maybe we shouldn't be allowed to eat any egg that was laid on Yom Rishon, forget about Yontif. So the Gemara says no, because on Yom Rishon of Chol, there's no din of Hachana. When do we say that there's an Iser Hachana from Shabbos to Yontif? That's when we need Hachana. When we need Hachana, then we need the Hachana of Shabbos, and that's prohibited. But in a case of a weekday on Sunday, where there you don't need any Hachana at all, you can eat your Suda without any Hachana, there we don't have this principle that there's an Iser because you're benefiting from the Hachana of Shabbos. When are you benefiting from the Hachana of Shabbos? When you need the Hachana. But in a case of Yom Rishon, you don't need the Hachana. So the Isa that prohibits me from eating on Yontif without Hachana tells me that if Yontif coincides with Yom Rishon, I am being matir my achila, I'm benefiting from my achila because I need Hachana with the Hachana of Shabbos. And the Torah does not allow me to benefit and permit my achila of Yontif through a Hachana of Shabbos. That's called Ein Shabbos Mechin LeYontif. If on the other hand Yom Rishon is a weekday, then in that case, I don't need any hachana. I'm not benefiting when I eat my suda on a regular Sunday from the hachana of Shabbos. Now we have the case where Yontif falls out on a different day of the week. No, Yontif falling out on a different day of the week comes under the same halacha of Beitza Shenolda b'Shabbos, Beitza Shenolda b'Yontif, and that is that you cannot have hachana on something that's not in the world, and that's called the Isur Nolad, which is the Isur Mukta. Now the main question we have to focus on is, if Rashi is telling us that when Yontif falls out on Yom Rishon, the Isur Achila is an Isur Doraisa, according to Rabba, because Ein Shabbos Mechin LeYontif is an Isur Doraisa, what about the classical case of Beitza Shenolda B'Yontif or Beitza Shenolda B'Shabbos, and we have the problem of the absence of Hachana because it's Nolad? You can't be Mechin on Erev Shabbos, Erev Yontif, Nolad, something that's not in the world. What is the nature of that Isur? Is that likewise an Isur Doraisa? So if you'll take a look at a paragraph here, which is on the bottom right, a small two-line paragraph that says V'omer Rashi.
Isn't that contradictory? You're saying something contradictory. There's no hachana in something that doesn't exist, and yet we're saying Shabbos is preparing for Yantav, but didn't exist then.
Well, no.
There's
two different types of hachana. There's one physical hachana, and that always takes place 24 hours before the birth of the, you know, the egg is laid. That's the physical hachana b'mitzius. And then there's an active hachana in which I have to prepare something and designate it before Shabbos for Shabbos. Now, if it's not in the world, I can't designate it for Shabbos.
Okay,
so that's the absence of hachana. In the case of Shabbos, which is followed by Yontif, there the physical hachana is done on Shabbos, 24 hours before the Leita. And therefore on Yontif, when I need a hachana, I'm benefiting and building my hachana to allow me to eat the food on the hachana of Shabbos. Okay. So he says here that Rashi quotes a sugya in Psachim Mem Zayin, and there Rabbah maintains that mukta is doraisa. So Rashi therefore puts what's called a lishitaso. Lishitaso means he puts two different statements of the same person together and shows how they are consistent. One statement is Rabbah at the beginning of Beitza, and there Rashi says that according to Rabbah, we're talking about an Isur Mukta Do'oraisa, and specifically in the case where Yontif is on Yom Rishon and Shabbos is Mechil Yontif, that's an Isur Do'oraisa. Now Rashi goes a step further, and Rashi says that that same Rabbah in Masecht Pesachim Daf Mem Zayin maintains that all of Mukta is Do'oraisa. Meaning the following. We said that if Shabbos comes before Yontif, or let's say it the other way around, Yontif comes after Shabbos, then the Torah says that there's a hachana before the egg was laid on Yontif. The hachana was on Shabbos. Now we're saying something even more than that. When the Torah says Ve'chinu Asasha Yavir, it's not just telling me that I can't have a hachana on Shabbos for Yontif. Right, that the hachana of Shabbos for Yontif is prohibited, but it's telling me, in a positive sense, that I must have a hachana. That's also written in this pasuk. So we have two dinim that are written in this pasuk, and they both are do'oraisa, the way Rashi understands Rabbah. One din is the Rabbah that's mentioned at the beginning of Beitza when Yontif falls out on Yom Rishon. Now we could ask a different question. What about Beitza Shenolda in general? Meaning the general halach of Mukta, that I have to designate something before Shabbos, and in the absence of that designation it becomes Mukta on Shabbos or Yontif. That too, says Rashi, is Doraisa according to Rabbah. And that's based on the Sugya Psachim. So we put the Sugya and Beitza together with the Sugya Psachim, and it becomes one happy family. What we see in Beitza is only a fraction of what Rabbah has to say, because all we know about the Issa Doraisa and Rabbah at the beginning of Beitza is the case of Yontif Shechalios Biyom Rishon, and that's the principle of Ein Shabbos Mechina LeYontif. And now when we put it together with the Sugya in Psachim, Rashi says there Rabbah in Psachim Mem Zayin maintains that all of Mukta is Doraisa, meaning whenever the absence of Hachana puts you in a situation where you want to eat something on Shabbos or Yontif, and it didn't have Hachana before Shabbos and Yontif, that's also Midoraisa. Yeah?
It seems to me there's a slight contradiction here, or maybe terms aren't clear to me. The two lines before that paragraph, they said that the reason the deen we just learned from the Mishnah in Beitza, according to Rabbah, that Shabbat, Yom Tov Achrei Shabbat, so that should be the Easter of Hechinu, and that would be Minatorah, right?
Right.
Then, but if they said that, then why does that apply to all Yom Tov? It says, Gezerah.
Oh,
doesn't that mean only Durabana?
So that's tilt.
So Beit Hillel doesn't agree with this Rashi?
No, he's saying like that.
He spoke and it's meant to be a Gezerah that's part of the messenger, right? So what's going on?
So Shmuel, that point is being is going to be clarified on the left side on the top. You see the words, Vizu Kavanasach Sam Sofer?
Okay, yeah, let's go for it.
Okay, so what's going to happen here in the Chasam Sofer, which is what we started with, is we're going to make this major distinction between Achila, which again includes all Shimush, and Tiltul. And what we're going to say is the following. There's a Gzera Derabbanon of Tiltul, and that Gzera Derabbanon is Atu Hotzah, and the Torah itself never prohibited Tiltul Muksa. And then is the Doraisa of Achila. And again, Achila means all Shimush. Now, all this is very complicated because of Tosus and the Rashba. Because everything that we've been presenting until now is based on Rashi. And Rashi's Shita turns out, at this particular point, is that according to Rabbah, Rashi holds that Muktzah is Doraisa. There are many Sugis and Shas that prove that Muktzah is the Rabbanan. And Tosis, therefore, in a number of places, you'll see it on the bottom right, in Tosis and Erevin, Lo Matzinu Yadenu V'Raglenu. On the one hand, we paskin like Rabbah, as far as the case of Yontif that falls out on Yom Rishon, and that becomes an Issa Doraisa. On the other hand, all over the place, we see that Muktzah is only Durabana. And he uses the phrase Lo Matzinu Yadenu V'Raglenu Mi Beis HaMedrash. You know, we can't take our feet or our hands out of the Beis HaMedrash. There's an absolute steer in here, because it's not like we're rejecting Rabbah by accepting that Muktzah is Drabbanon. We do accept Rabbah. So how can we resolve this contradiction? On the one hand, accept Rabbah, which means that if Yontif falls out on Yom Rishon, then the Isra Achila of the Beitza that was born, that was laid on Yontif, is Doraisa. And at the same time, we have a principle that Muktzah is Drabbanon, and that's all over the place. And Tosis is not sensitive to the Chasam Sofer's distinction between Achila and Tiltul. He assumes, Tosis, against the Chasam Sofer, that when we talk about Muktzah all over the place, and we're talking about Muktzah being Derabbanon, that's as far as Achila is concerned. Even Achila is only Derabbanon. So how do we reconcile that with Rabbah? So the Rashba goes in a certain direction in Masechta Beitza Daf Memches, and his direction is that Rabbah rescinded his original position, Chazarbo. And this whole Veichinu Esesha Yaviu is only an Asmachta, it's not really Doraisa, Muktzah's Drabbana. But leaving the Rashba on the side for a moment, and going, you know, with Tosis's approach, that we don't know that Rabbah changed his mind, but we have a halachic problem, because on the one hand we're going to accept Rabbah, and therefore Beitza Shenolda B'Yom Rishon Shal Yontif Li'achar HaShabbos is also min HaTorah, and on the other hand we're going to assume that Muktzah, even as far as Achil is concerned, is Drabbanon. I say according to Tosis' approach, not Rashi. Again, Rashi's assuming that Muktzah according to Rabbah is Doraisa. Right. And therefore, we're stuck with this question of Tosis. How can you tell me that Muktzah is Doraisa all over Shas? And that's how we accept it, La'alacha. We paskin that Muktzah is only Drabbanon, and then you want to maintain that we paskin like Rabbah, but Rashi says that Muktzah is Doraisa according to Rabbah. So how can we paskin like Rabbah, meaning that Muktzah is Doraisa, and at the same time we paskin that Muktzah is Drabbanon? That's a head-on collision. So as far as Tosis is concerned, Tosis is going to take a whole different approach. Tosis is going to say the following. On the one hand, we paskin like Rabbah in the case of Yontif Yom Rishon, that's the Oraisa. Why? Because that he calls Chiyuvi. I'll just show you where that is. If you see the last line on the right column, do you have such a thing? Because I'd love you to underline it. You see the right column, the last line, do you see those two words, Biofen Chiyuvi? Okay. Now, one line above that, he has Chisaron Hachal. So again, I'd love you to underline these things, because these are key words and key phrases that will reappear over and over again. And we're laying down the framework here, the basic foundations of books. There's something called okay, it's a little bit hard to say this in English, but I'll try my best. There's a negative hachana in a positive sense. No, as a negative force. It's a force that we have to reckon with. And that's the negative hachana of Shabbos v'yontif. In other words, when the halacha says ein Shabbos mechino liyontif, that's called chiyuvi. That's a positive isur, because since this egg was prepared on Shabbos v'yontif, that generates an isur because of the hachana of Shabbos. Then he says there's something called chisaron hachana. That's not chiyuvi, that's called shlili. Shlili means negative. Negative means the absence of something. What you don't have is a positive hachon. And Tosis's theory, his thesis is going to be the following. Yes, muktzah's d'oraisa, but yes, muktzah's d'rabbanan. They're both true and there's no contradiction. When is muktzah d'oraisa? That's going to be b'ofen chiyuvi, when we have this negative hachana of Shabbos. And the Torah says that if Shabbos prepared this Beitzah, then the Beitzah is Asura. Why did Shabbos prepare the Beitzah? The Beitzah was born on Yontif, was laid on Yontif, and it was Yom Rishon. And the Hachana for that Beitzah was on Shabbos. Now we have in this Beitzah a physical Hachana of Shabbos for tomorrow, for 24 hours later when the egg is laid, on Yontif. And we violate the principle of Ein Shabbos Mechino L'Yontif if we eat that Beitzah. That's a Doraisa principle, and here we accept Rava. However, Rava did not go one step further and create an Iser Muktza Doraisa in the case where I'm lacking Hachana, the absence of Hachana. What does it mean, the absence of Hachana? You have an egg that was laid on Yontif. You couldn't possibly prepare it on Erev Yontif. How can you designate something that's not in the world? That Iser Mukta is only the Rabbana. The Rabbana went one step further. They said that even if I don't have a positive Hachan of Shabbos for Yontif, correct? So let's say, for example, Yontif falls out on a Tuesday and the egg was laid on Yontif. In such a case, I don't have a Hachan of Shabbos for Yontif, so I don't have the Ofen Chiyuvi, but what I have is a Chisaron Hachana. Why is it Chisaron Hachana? Because I couldn't possibly on Tuesday prepare the... On Monday. I couldn't possibly on Monday prepare this egg because it didn't exist. That's called the absence of Hachana. That's only the Rabbana. Rashi holds that according to Rabba, even the absence of Hachana is the Doraisa. Because when the Torah says, V'yechinu es asher yaviu, the Torah is telling me two different things. Number one, it's telling me that Shabbos can't be the Hachana for Yontif. And number two, it's telling me that everything that I want to use on Shabbos or Yontif has to be designated. And if not, I'm not allowed to use it. And if I can't use it, that's Doraisa. Comes along the Chassam Sofer and he points out that there's a very important Bamedvar Mamurim, a proviso, a restriction here. Rashi's Mukta Doraisa is only as far as Achila and Shimush is concerned, because for Achila and Shimush I need Hachana and I'm lacking Hachana. That's called Mukta, but it's only Mukta L'Achila. But in the case of Tiltul, that's already a classical Gzera D'Rabbana, which even Rashi is moda that it's only D'Rabbana. So you really have, in a sense, three levels here. You've got the case of Beitza Shenolda B'yontif B'yom Rishon L'Achra Shabbos. You have the case of the absence of Hachana, and now you have the case of the Issa Tiltul. In the first two cases, we're talking about the Isra Achila. In the last case, which is Tiltul, we're not talking about Achila at all. In the first two cases, we can raise the possibility of a Doraisa. And here we're going to have Machlokas, Rashi, and Tosfos. And Tosfos really is representative of all the Rishonim here. And in the last case, clearly we're dealing with a Derabbanan. And there's no ifs or ands or buts about it. There's no question in anyone's mind. The first two cases where you're lacking in Hachana, that might be according to Rabbi Doraisa. We have Rashi Shita and Tosfos Shita. Rashi Shita is that according to Rabbi, any absence of Hachana is Doraisa, because the Torah says you need Hachana, you didn't have Hachana. You need to be matir, any enjoyment and any benefit that you have from anything in this world and anything in this universe, let it be Ochlin, let it be Kalim, whatever you want to use, you have to have Achana. And the absence of Achana, the Torah says you're not allowed to use it. That's a Doraisa. Tosfos, on the other hand, holds that there's only an Issa Doraisa according to Rabbah in the Ofen Chiyuvi case where Shabbos was making for Yontif. The absence of Achana, even according to Rabbah, even as far as Achil is concerned, is only Dorabana. And then we have the Issa Tiltul. That's already A gzera, atu otsa, and that's a classic derabban. But it comes out according to Rashi that the overall picture of mukta, according to Rava, is doraisa. At least as far as achil is concerned. Again, we're never going to extend that to tiltil. And that's where the Rashba comes up with a gemara later on in Beitza, and he says that Rava changed his mind. Rashi doesn't seem to operate with that principle that Rava changed his mind. Yeah.
So according to Rashi and Tosfos, meisering food on Shabbos would be Isur Deraita. But according to
this, I don't know. What's wrong with meisering food on Shabbos? You're talking about eating or just doing the Afrashas Maaseh?
To eat it, yeah.
Oh, okay. So what happened? Now we have Tevel.
Right.
And he went ahead and he was mafresh it.
Right.
And now he ate it.
Right.
So according to, let's go quick to Tosfos first. According to Tosfos, there was no hachana of Shabbos for Yontif, so therefore we're dealing with the Drabonim. Correct? Again, let's go over one more time. According to Tosfos, there's only one sliver, one case where you have books of Doraisa. That's only in the case of a Beitza that was laid on Yom Rishon of Yontif, and it was prepared on Shabbos. And that's a violation of a Doraisa, according to Rabbah, which is called Ein Shabbos Mechina LeYontif. Your case would come under the general halacha of Muktza, meaning that going into Yontif, this was Muktzah, or going to Shabbos, whatever your case is. And then he went ahead and he was Mafresh. Now, here, David, we get very complicated because you mentioned the case of Maaseh. You know, I don't know if had you mentioned any other case, I wouldn't have made this comment. But in the case of Maaseh, we have the Gemara that we studied at great length on Daf Mem Gimel, that Tevel Muchan Hu Etzel Shabbos, which means that there is no Iser or absence of hachana, whether it's Doraisa according to Rashi and Rabbah, or whether it's Derabbanan according to Tosfos, there is no such Isur in the case of Tevel, because Tevel already has a built-in hachana. I don't know if you were here when we discussed that. Okay. So just, you happen to fall into a little bit of a ditch here, by fluke. The one case that you gave is the only exceptional case.
I can't think of so many Ochel cases, that's all. I'm finding it hard to find this Ochel, preparing Ochel, On.
Well, let's take the case, for example, of Grogros Vitzimukim, or the case of Tamar de Iska that we mentioned. You know, these are all cases where it's mukta because there was no hachana going into Shabbos, going into Yontif. Now the question is, he went ahead and he ate these Grogros Vitzimukim. Would that be a violation of a Doraisa? Rashi would say, according to Rabbah, that because there was no hachan on the grogos vitzimukim, on the contrary, what did he do with these grogos vitzimukim? He put them up on his roof for the hot sun to be down, and it became very inedible. That achilu would be a violation of the doraisa because the Torah says veichinu es asher yaviyu. That's Rashi. Tosfos would say that's only derabbanan. The only doraisa that we have according to Tosfos in Rabbah's frame of reference is only the case of yontif shechalios biyom rishon. I gave you the case of Tamar de Iska. So let's say, for example, Rabbi Yehuda Shita in Tamar de Iska is that you package these dates, designating them for marketing. In such a case, if you would go ahead and eat them, again, this is only according to Rabbi Yehuda, keep that in mind, because today's sugya is Rabbi Shimon. But according to Rabbi Yehuda, if you would go ahead and eat the Tamar de Iska on Shabbos, then it's possible, which would be Rashi according to Rabbah, that you violate an Issur Doraisa, because there was no achon on the time of the Iska. You put it out of your mind, out of use. You packaged it, and it's ready to get shipped off on the next plant.
The remnant oil in the lamp that went out.
Right.
So again, according to Rabbi Yehud, if the lamp goes out,
Rabbi Shimon, it's now a machloket d'oraita, what Rabbi Shimon said.
Well, again, Rabbi Shimon is going to say, yeah. Well, yes and no. I mean, yeah. It's definitely a machloket d'oraita, but it's not a machloket about a pasuk. Mm. You know, all the principles are agreed upon. The machloket between Rabbi Yehud and Rabbi Shimon is: did you prepare going into Shabbos the shemen? And the Gemara is going to differentiate, which we want to discuss today, between a classical ner and an ashishos, which is a large, you know, a volume of oil.
Extra oil in it.
And then even Reb Shimon would agree that he had no anticipation whatsoever that he would use the oil on Shabbos. He assumed it would be lit for the entire Shabbos, and a wind came along. But in the case of a standard size nair, where there's a very limited volume of shemen, then Rabbi Shimon assumed that it's not going to light for all of Shabbos. At some point it's going to go out. And if there's any shemen left over, residue, then we're going to discuss what about shemen that was metafte from the nair, meaning it overflowed from the nair, and whether or not Rav Shimon would go as far as to say even that's not mutzah. But again, all of that is what I call a secondary machlokas. We're not arguing about primary rules over here. You know, we're requiring achana. The question is, was there achana, was there not a achana? That's a secondary issue. But fundamentally, we require achana. Now, Rav Shimon is going to be much more liberal and say, well, there was a hachana. You know, Rav Shimon has the optimistic view that everything's innocent until proven guilty and everything is mukhan, and I always anticipate the possibility that if I can't feed my guests with enough dates, I'm going to take it, go into my storage, and if the candle goes out, I'm going to use the shemen for whatever I want to use it, and so forth and so on. That's what I want to get to today, but I just wanted to first discuss. This is very fascinating to me.
We interpreted Rashi that he makes a distinction between Achil and Tiltol, but does he say that Mefurash anywhere? That he
Rashi says in Mefurash. Where is the Rashi? Okay.
Because we had it in the Tosfos.
Just give me a second. Because again, to answer your question, Ben, if not for this page, I would have to be a Bucky of Masechta Beitza. There are so many sugyas that you have to know Masechta Beitza. Oh, so this is Rashi in Beitz on Daf Yuda Aleph, which if you're on the left column, you're looking at, I don't know if you call it the third paragraph or the second paragraph, because the top paragraph is really belongs to the bottom right column. But anyway, do you see a paragraph that starts with Igle Tal?
Yes.
Okay. The Igle Tal quotes this Chassam Sofer, which is also written in the Nesivos, that there are two categories of Isur Tiltul. One is Isur Achila, which is the absence of Hachana, and then it is Tiltul Mishum Hotzah. Ubaze Yishev, he explains and reconciles the Rashi in Beitza Daf Yud Aleph. What does Rashi say on Beitza Daf Yud Aleph? Rashi says, Hare, this is a quote, Hare im ein Isur Hotzah, ein Isur Tiltul. Isn't that fascinating? Rashi says in Masechta Beitza that on Yontif there's no Isur Tiltul Muktzah.
Makes sense.
Why? Because the whole reason for Tiltul Muktzah is Atuat Hotzah. There's no Isur Hotzah on Yontif. Now, that principle itself, that there's no Isur Hotzah on Yontif, is a machlokas. But we're going to go according to the main thrust and the majority view that there's no Isur Hotzah on Yontif. On Yontif I can carry as much as I like. Again, it's not so simple, but we're going with that approach. So Rashi says if that's true, then since the Isur Tiltul Muktzah is a gzera atu hotzah, that gzera could not apply in Yontif because there is no hotzah. You're saying, well, I'm afraid if he moves things around, he might take them outside into Rishus HaRabim and violate hotzah. There is no violation of hotzah. And he says, therefore, lo gazru al tiltul on Yontif. So how could Rashi say such a thing? What do you mean it's a gzera? Rashi holds that muksas doraisa. The answer is, says the Gital, and this is also based on the Sam Sofer, the Rashi in Beitza Daf Yud Aleph, when he says the Muktzah is the Rabbanon, he's not talking about Muktzah, he's talking about the Isur Tiltul. The Isur Tiltul is the Rabbanon Atu Hotzah. Does that answer your question, Ben?
Yes.
Because Ben was asking, where do we see that Rashi himself is Moda, that Tiltul is only the Rabbanon? Maybe Rashi holds that Muktzah includes not only Achila, but also Tiltul. He is the Rashi explicit in Beitza Daf Yud Aleph.
So why wouldn't these a simple argument if Yontif in the middle of the week is lo klug? If we're going to usher it on Sunday, then if I use it on a Tuesday, I might come to the mistake.
Great. So
just lo klug.
So that also would be a gzera d'rabbanon.
Right, I don't need the argument hachina. It's just lo klug. We watch the.
But when you say, I wouldn't say lo klug. I would call it a gzera or a shvus d'rabbanon. If we're going to allow you in the case of Yontif on a Monday, the Tuesday you might come to eat it on if Yontif right. falls out on Sunday as well.
Argument.
Correct. But again, that is going to contradict Rashi. Because Rashi maintains that if the Beitza was born on Yontif on a Monday or a Tuesday or whatever day, it's Asa D'Oraisa. Because Rashi understood that when Rabba maintained the Iser Hachana in the case of Yontif Shachal Yosef Yom Rishon, it meant because there's an absence of Hachana. Rashi never accepted this distinction between a Ofen Chiyuvi and a Chisaron Hachana. Rashi held that in general, the problem of Muktzah according to Rabba is the absence of Hachana. But your explanation of a Durabana could work very well according to Tosus Hashita. But you see, the only problem I have with that explanation, Dr. Joel, is that what happens with Shabbos? Meaning, if you're dealing with Yontif, okay, I could say that whenever the Beitza is nulled on Yontif, there could be a Gzera or to Yom Rishon. But if you're talking about Shabbos, you know, you have an egg that was laid on Shabbos, I'm not sure, you know, I don't know exactly how your low plug is going to work in that case. But Dal Nihachi, the Gemara says explicitly at the end of Masechta Shabbos that Tiltul is a Shvus of Hotzah. Comes on Rashi, he says, therefore that shouldn't apply on Yontif. And the Igle Tal points out that this is because Rashi admits that Tiltul was never included in the Isur Muktzah, which is a Doraisa, because of the absence of Achana. The absence of Achana means that you didn't have a preparation for using something. It has nothing to do with moving something. Moving something doesn't require Achana. And the Holy Isur Tiltul, therefore, couldn't be based on Veichinu as a Sheyaviu. It's a rabbinic invention. And that's what the Samsofa quotes from Kufchav Gimel in the paragraph that we started with today. That it was Nechemiah ben Chachalia who instituted the Gzeira of Tiltul Muktzah. Put that together with the Rashi and Beis and the Igli Tal, and you have a very good picture of it.
Do we now understand Rambam's reason for not relying just on Hotzah as the reason for his Tiltul Muktzah story?
Yes and no, David, because the Rambam comes up with this whole theory about Shvisa Nikeres, about Hanoch, you know, Vilmanya Nuach, that a person has to change his behavior pattern in a radical way. I mean, the Rambam doesn't seem to be operating with any of the categories that we've been operating with. He doesn't mention Veichinu Asasher Yaviu. He doesn't mention the Gzera to Tiltul or to Hotzah. You know, all these reasons that we've been operating with somehow don't appear on the radar screen of the Rambam, although again, that's a subject of investigation unto itself. There are many Rambams that we didn't see. We only saw one Rambam.
But we see from what you just said there that the Hotzah argument is very weak for Yom Tov.
I don't know. I'm not sure that the Rambam is talking about Yom Tov. So I don't know. The Rambam is in Hilchos Shabbos. The last thing I wanted to show you is a paragraph that starts Umitzad Sheni. Do you have such a thing?
Yes.
And he quotes a Rashi in Beitza Chavav Amid Beis with regard to Migu. Now, we've been discussing this Migu for quite a while. And Migu means that if it was Mukta going into Shabbos, then it remains Mukta for the entire Shabbos, even if the reason for the Mukta was removed. And that's going to be a classical discussion with regard to Bosses L'Davar Asur. If something was a Bosses going into Shabbos, and then the Mukta was removed from the Bosses, are we allowed now to enjoy the benefit of this Bosses, and it goes back to its original status as a Kli? And the answer is no, because of the principle of Migu. And Rashi has an interesting presentation about Migu in Beitza Davka Vavam in Beis. So again, Rabbi, so you see how many different sugyas in Beitza we mentioned. We mentioned the sugya in Beitza on Daf Beis. We mentioned the sugya in Beitza on Daf Yud Aleph, a sugya in Beitza on Daf Mem Ches, and now a sugya with a Rashi on Daf Chav Vav Mem Beis. That's why I say that it's fascinating to me that if you want to create an introduction, an overview of Muktzah, the Masechta that you have to choose is not Shabbos, it's Beitza. It's absolutely fascinating. All the fundamental Rashis on Muktzah are in Masechta Beitza. So what is Migu? Mishum de'i lo hayaroi b'bein hashmasha, says Rashi, vadei asurim. Why? Because ein kan achana mibod yom. Uman de'isle mukta. Okay, we're not sure. He adds in parentheses here that that's Rabbi Yehuda. Okay, that's an interesting point which we want to clarify, but that's his own addition. Let's just stick to the Rashi for a moment. So Rashi says, Uman de Islay Muktzah, is hachana mi bojom boy. Shenemer v'ichinu es asher yaviu. Rabbosai, what does that sound like? Does that sound like a Darabonin or a Doraisa? It sounds like a Doraisa. He's quoting the Pasuk of Yechinu to show you view. And he's adding Migu into this Doraisa. Meaning, okay, until now we've pointed out that Muktzah might be Doraisa. Why? Because it doesn't have Hachana. But now we're talking about a case where in the middle of Shabbos, there's no longer a reason for Muktzah. So if there's no longer, you've removed the Sibas HaMuktzah, the Goreim HaMuktzah, why is it Muktzah? So Rashi says, I'll tell you why it's Muktzah. Because the Torah requires Hachana. And when does Hachana have to take place? Before Shabbos. No, Rashi says, you didn't make Hachana before Shabbos. So going into Shabbos, it was Muktzah. There was an absence of Hachana. So what good does it do you if you remove the Sibas HaMuktzah? You still don't have Hachana. The Hachana has to be on Bein HaShemashes going into Shabbos. This is a brilliant Rashi because this Rashi proves to us that Enochinami Mukta is Doraisa, and not only that, Migu is Doraisa. This is not some sort of a rabbinic invention. You know, the rabbis had nothing to do with their time, so they sat there and they created this very fancy thing called Migu, the Skatsoyla Ben Hashvash, the Skatsoyla Kuliyama. No! The Migu itself is nothing more than an application of the Dorais of Hachon. Hachon has to take place on Yom Shishi, on Erev Shabbos.
Why did I Ben Hashmosh to have Hachon at noon for you?
Yeah, no, Chas Shom. No, Rashi doesn't mean only in Bein HaShemashes. Rashi means by Bein HaShemashes. The latest time for Hachana would be Bein HaShemashes. It doesn't mean that, you know, the moment before Bein HaShemashes, you know, if I go 2 minutes before Bein HaShemashes, I can't have a Hachana. Rashi's saying that sometime by Bein HaShemashes, you must have a Hachana, because the Torah says, V'yom HaShishi Ve'ichinu Es Asher Yaviv. Now look, the man fell, I think, again, don't hold me responsible for this, but as far as my memory, the man fell in the morning. Am I right? Does anybody know?
Yes,
I think that's so. I'm not even sure. It may have fallen before Zrichas HaKham. Anyway, it was in the morning. So the Torah is saying to you that take a double portion on Friday. When did he take the double portion?
Early
in the morning. It doesn't mean that, you know, the minute before Shabbos. Now, it could be, you know, this would be an interesting question, Dr. Joel, that maybe the Maisa Hachana took place in the morning, but the Chalais Din Hachana is Chal as we enter into Shabbos. Because what I mean to say is that in the 12-hour period in the interim, maybe he changed his mind. You know, he decided, well, this, you know what, this... You know, I have a birthday party on Sunday. You know, my daughter's sweet 16 is on Sunday. I want to save the man for Sunday. You know, and he decided I'm not going to eat it on Shabbos. Probably it would have gotten dissolved anyway. It wouldn't do any good.
The chicks are on the pillow.
Yeah,
right.
So earlier I had a chanah for the pillow.
Right.
They could throw on a Ben
Right, so that Achara was cancelled. That's like my case where he prepared a double portion on Friday morning, and then going into Shabbos, he made a decision, I'm not going to use it on Shabbos.
Uh-huh.
So definitely, you know, what we definitely need is the Maisa HaChana sometime before Shabbos, and the Chalois HaChana going into Shabbos. Right, okay. And the Chalois is Chal Me'elov automatically if he doesn't change his mind, but he could always change his mind, and he rescinds his designation. But what I'm trying to say is that you don't need, you know, Shabbos enters at 4:01, he doesn't have to at 4 o'clock go running around and making his hachana. And, you know, there's a hachana that's omeid v'kayim, you know, from whenever. You know, I could be making something on Sunday. In fact, I'll tell you a secret. Beit Shammai hold, and I'll tell you why they still disagree, because fundamentally Beit Shammai is right. Beit Shammai hold that on Sunday already you should be preparing for Shabbos. They still say you have to be a Baal Bitachon, take it easy, don't be so, you know, what's it called in psychology, what's it called, those people? What are they called?
Obsessive.
Obsessive.
COD.
Yeah, don't be so about it, you know, you have a good piece of meat, don't worry, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will take care of you and eat it on Sunday, and have a good steak dinner on Sunday. You know, my in-laws go to a hotel in Fleischmann's, New York. And Sunday night they serve rib steak. You know, everybody comes around. You know, why should I be? You know, Basil says, Beit Shammai say, don't eat the rib steak. You know, save it for Shabbos. Basil, don't worry, we'll get another rib steak for Shabbos. But really, the Hachana should already take place as early as possible. He says, Ulechora soser Rashi dvar b'tam muktzah. Right? Because Rashi's saying that the reason for muktzah is because of tiltal. So he says, Bireg letal, shebeis didim yeshkan. Okay. Yud Beis means the sugya starts on Yud Alf and goes on to Yud Beis. Myri Rashi betiltal muktza. And that Rashi says, Xavier Mishumat Hotza. But all the other Rashis are talking about the Yisra Achila, and that's because of the absence of Hachon. So Rabbo said, at this point, we want to get to Daf Mem Dalet, because I want to make some progress in the Gemara. I'll ask you, if you possibly can, to make a note that we're up to Menire Shadvar Mifu Arim. Okay, then? So that we can, you know, what I want to do is have a shiluv of both this overview of Muktzah and at the same time continue in the sugya. And pages 250 and 251, if I can leave with you, Ben, if you don't mind, so that hopefully we'll get to that tomorrow. Okay, then?
Photocopy this?
Yeah, not right this second, because right now we're going to the Gemara, but I want to leave it in your possession. If you can make an extra copy for me or give me back the original, that would be great. And now we're looking on Daf Mem Dalet Amud Aleph. Okay, then? Also, Ben, I'm just going to give this to you, but not to anybody else. If you want to make a note, these are the footnotes here that we want to cover today. So if you just want to write that down somewhere
in the
Masifti, because you're the only Baal Masifti here besides me. Tesvav, Yud Ches, and Chav. All of them, Dalet Amud Aleph. Do you see this? 1, 2, and 3. Okay, then?
Okay, thank you.
So I'll take this back from you, because that's my guide for today's Shia. Okay. So let's just review. What do we know? We have a Mishnah and a Braisa. The Mishnah records a single Machlokas. Okay, two different Shitas. And that's the Tanakama and Rav Shimon. The Braisa records a four-way Machlokas. So life becomes even more Levitic. In the Mishnah, we have a Machlokas about what's called a Ner Yashan. Ner Yashan is a Ner, a receptacle that's already been used. And if that be the case, you don't usually want to take that ner and use it as a drinking cup, for example, because it's already ma'us. And this is the shita that we'll see in the braisa that is identified as the shita of Yehuda, who accepts a category called migu machmas mius. You'll notice again in the six categories of the Beis Yosef that we had here, mukta machmas mius doesn't appear on the list. That would have been number 7. But that's because we don't paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, and we reject the shita of Ner Yashan of Muktzah Machmas Mius, and that's what Rabbi Shimon says in our Mishnah, Kol HaNer is Metaltalin. The only case where Rabbi Shimon agrees is Ner Dolek. And Ner Dolek could be viewed under one of two categories. Either it's Muktzah Machmas Isur, because if you take away the Shemen, then you're causing Kibui, or alternatively, it's muktzah because it's a basis l'dovra os. Either way, as long as the candle is lit, you're not allowed to take any oil from the candle, and you're not allowed to move around the candle, and that's called muktzah. Now the braisa has four shitas. Shita number one is Rabbi Yehuda, which we saw in the Mishnah. Shita number two is Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir holds that we reject Muktzah Machmas Mius, which means that even a Ner Yashan is permitted. You're allowed to move the Ner Yashan. However, Chutz Min HaNer Shedlikim Bo B'Shabbos, which sounds awfully similar to what we saw in the Mishnah of Rabbi Shimon, but that can't be because Rabbi Shimon is coming around the bend in just a minute. So if you read carefully, there's a slight difference between the language of Rabbi Meir and the language of our Mishnah in the name of Rabbi Shimon. In the name of Rabbi Shimon, the Mishnah speaks about Ner Hadolek. Rabbi Meir speaks about a Ner Shehidliku Bo. Correct, Shehidlikubo, which means that they lit the candle before Shabbos, and then even after it goes out, you're not allowed to move the Ner. Whereas Reb Shimon in our Mishnah, we'll see this in the Brice in just a second, he says that if the Ner goes out, you're allowed to move the Ner. The only time you're not allowed to move the Ner is Hadolik. Hadolik means currently it's lit. So what's the machlokas now between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Shimon? Let's read Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon Omer chutz ben aner adolek v'shabbos. However, kavsa, if it went out, mutal etaltala, you're allowed to move it. So wherein lies the machlokas between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Shimon? Rabbi Meir has a position, has a commitment to the principle of migu, and therefore, since this nair was dolik as we entered into Shabbos, it remains migu for the entire Shabbos. Rabbi Shimon is not committed to the position of migu, which itself has to be understood, because as we said in the name of Rashi, v'yichinu asesha yaviu, and here there was no achana. So what happens if the nair goes out? Why does Rabbi Shimon say now I'm allowed to use this nair? There was no achana on this nair. And in fact, Rabbi Shimon is moda that as long as the nair is lit, then you can't move the nair either because of kibui or because of mukta machmas bosses l'dover aser. Now all of a sudden it becomes mutter. What's the counter argument against migu? And we're going to have to assume that the counter argument against migu is anticipation, which means we do have a hachon. That even though on Erev Shabbos he lit the candle, nevertheless he's always dreaming that maybe the candle will go out. Except for one exception. Avoko, suka, arav, ashashis. In these three cases of large vessels which have a humongous volume of Shemen, he doesn't even dream that it'll go out on Shabbos, is lo yazizim imkomon, which means that even after the nair goes out, right, these are your, I gave you the example of the 7-day, yard site candles, right? So even so, lo yazizim imkomon. So we have a case where even Reb Shimon is mekel. So again, in our Mishnah, we have the chumer of Rabbi Yehuda as far as mukta machmas mirs. Rabbi Meir, in the Brisa, removes the Iser, rejects the Iser of Muktzah Machmas Migus. But Rabbi Meir says that there is such a thing as Migu, which means that if the Ner was Dolek on Erev Shabbos, even if it goes out in the middle of Shabbos, it remains also. Now we have the Shita of Rabbi Shimon, he rejects Migu, therefore he's going to be Mekel not only in Muktzah Machmas Migus, which is called the Ner Yashan, he's also going to be Mekel in the case of a nair that was lit on Erev Shabbos, and now the candle was extinguished on Shabbos, you're allowed to move that nair, and he rejects migu, but that's only in the case where we anticipated that it would go out during Shabbos. But if there was a massive amount of volume of oil, and that's the case of Ashoshes, then even Rav Shimon agrees that there was no hachana whatsoever, not even a shemitz of hachana, and therefore it's muktzah for the entire Shabbos, despite the wind. Right now we have the fourth shita, which is Rabbi Eliezer Rav Shimon, and he's the son of Rabbi Shimon, and he says mistapek min aner hakova, and he's saying that a person is allowed to take the shemen which is located in a ner hadolik. This is mind-boggling. You're talking about shemen that is actively feeding a flame, right? Every ner is made up of three parts. You have the ner, the receptacle, you have the shemen, and you have the psila, right? You could add a fourth part to it. The psila is holding on to what? A shalheves. And now the shemen that's feeding this psila, and therefore keeping the shalheves alive, and he's allowed to take the oil. The Gemara is going to have a real problem here with Rabbi Eliezer Rav Shimon, because Rabbi Eliezer Rav Shimon is going a step further than his father. He's allowing you to take the oil even while the candle is lit. And not only that, umin hashemen hametaftef, and if there's any shemen that spills over, you're allowed to collect it in a kli, even though the ner is still lit. Vafilu b'shah shahaner dole. Omer Abaye, what's going on over here? Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Shimon, Sarala Kavua Bechada, Upolagale Bechada. He accepts his father's shita with regard to one aloch, but not with regard to a second. Sarala Avua Bechada. In what sense, in what context does he agree to his father? That's as far as the Lesle Mukta. In other words, he doesn't accept the principle of migu, that if it was asur v'ein hashmash, it's asur for the entire Shabbos, therefore the candle goes out, it's mutter. However, Rabbi Shimon would not allow you to take from the oil while the candle is lit, the oil is feeding the fire. But the Iyu Reb Elazar went a step further and he holds Afagav D'lo Kava. And that's what we want to understand. How could it be Afagav D'lo Kava? Now I have here two footnotes that I want to learn with you. One is number Tesvav, and I say this for Ben. So if you take a look at Tesvav, he says the following. Rashi holds in Masechta Beitza, again, everything always, all roads lead to Beitza, that Mistapik min Hashemesh b'ner chayv chatos. Wow. That if a nair is lit, and it's being fed by oil, and if you take some of that oil off, you siphon it off, you're violating Melechas Kibu Doraisa, and you chayv chatos. Why shemekatzer zman dleikasa? Because Rashi holds that if you are limiting the amount of time that the candle could be lit, that's called kibud. And therefore, we have a problem here with Rabbi Elazar Reb Shimon. How is he allowing you to take from the shemen shebener? So Rashi answers, because the ner is holech v'kava, which means that it's already in the process of going out. You know, it's not like there's a major amount of energy, you know, a major amount of oil that's feeding this fire, and now you take away that oil, you're really diminishing the flame or the amount of time it'll lit. But no, the nair is already on its way out. Ve'haner yichaba memela. Even if you don't take the oil, it's about to go out. And v'netilasa min hashemen, when he takes some of the oil out, einu makatzer zmano. So Rashi is assuming the following physics, yes, that the amount of time it's going to take until this nair extinguishes is not in any way affected by the fact that he takes away the oil.
It goes contrary to your logic. Sorry.
Well, let's put it to you this way. I'll give you an extreme case where even you'll agree. Let's say the nair is about to go out. You know, like when you light the nair Hanukkah, sometimes you'll see that for whatever reason the wick is not holding on to the thing. So it's about to go out. The shemen now is not going to extend the amount of time. It's already in the process of what? Of being extinguished. Okay, that's an extreme case. I don't know if Rashi is referring to that extreme case or not. However, many Rishonim disagree with Rashi. And that you'll be happy to know. The Ritva, the Tosfos Rosh, they hold that mistapik min hashemen shebener chayav, that in any case, he is going to nullify the shalheves, the flame, or diminish the shalheves by taking away the oil. And therefore, again, we have to understand Rabbi Eliezer. We're back to the drawing board. How could Rabbi Eliezer therefore allow you to take away some of the shemen if, by definition, according to these Rishonim at least, mistapik min haner, even if it's holy for kovas chayv chatos? And therefore, they have to reinterpret Rabbi Elazar Reb Shimon. What does Rabbi Elazar Reb Shimon mean when he's allowing you, in the case of Nair, of what was the language of Rabbi Elazar Reb Shimon, of Mistapik Min Nair HaKoveh? What does that mean, HaKoveh? Rashi says it's in the process of going out. What do they say? He says, Hainu HaNer Kova Kvar. It's already out. And Rabbi Elazar Cholik al Aviv, Hayimutul Estafik Min Hashemin Shemetafteif Me'aner, the whole machlokas between Rabbi Elazar Reb Shimon and his father can be reduced to one and only one issue. The nair that spills out of the receptacle while the candle is active, when it's lit. Meaning, according to Rashi, there's a double machlokas between Rabbi Elazar and his father. Number one, are you allowed to take the oil from the lit candle in a case where it's about to go out, it's in the process of going out? And number two, are you allowed to enjoy the shemen that spilled out from the nair? The other Rishonim reject that first machlokas, and even Rabbi Elazar Reb Shimon admits that you're not allowed to take any of the oil out. That's footnote number Yud Tesvav. Am I correct?
Yes, sir.
Right. Now,
I want to just understand.
Yeah, go ahead.
Spilled out meaning I have a receptacle and some stuff just dropped.
Right, it flows over. It overflows.
Right. In other words, my using of the mistake from the what flowed over will will not impinge.
Right, it's already out of the net. Right. Right. So then it's only a question of muksa. And Reb Shimon says, well, in this case, yeah, as long as the nair is dolik, it's muksa. And Reb Shimon says, no, it's only muksa insofar as it's part of the nair. Once it gets separated from the nair because it overflows, it's no longer muktzah. And again, we're going to have to analyze the machlokas, but that's just a simple level of the machlokas. Now, I want to show you this footnote. He says, Vadai ain't kavonis Abaye Shrabi Eleza Matil Istapik Minera Dolek Heitev. For sure, Abaye never meant to accuse Rabbi Elazar of Shimon of permitting you to take a very active nair that's being fed by the oil and take away that oil. Vieno omid l'chavos, and it's as I said, it's a healthy, you know, nair. Ella heterohu b'ner hakova v'holich. Ella shadai lo kova l'gamre. Okay, so this is the way Rashi understands Abaye's explanation of Rabbi Elezer. It's already in the process of holich v'kova. Whatever that process means, it's a little bit unclear. However, we already saw that other Rishonim disagree, the Tosa Rosh, the Ritva, etc. They hold that we're only talking about Shemen Anotev, Shemen that overflows. Okay. Yesh lahakshos. We should be bothered by the following question. Madu Rabbi Shimon Oser says Shemen Anotev. This is a gewaldige question that we have to understand. Why doesn't he agree with the son? All the principles lead us to that conclusion. Namely, that if the nair is dolek now, then it's mukta. Let's call that mukta machmas isur. However, the shemen that separates itself from the nair is not shemen adolek. So why should that continue to be mukta? And in fact, Rabbi Shimon maintains that if the nair was kava, then everything is mutter. The nair, the shemen, everything. Halo kevon shekvar me'erev Shabbos haya v'daito. I would underline these words. I can't do it because I'm holding on to the Gemara of the Yeshiva. But he says, halo kevon shekvar me'erev Shabbos haya v'daito sheyitov shemen min haner. In other words, he puts such a volume of oil. And if he does this every Shabbos, he already learned the trade. You know, he knows the ropes. He knows that some of the shemen is going to go out of the nair. And the proof of the pudding that he knows it and he anticipates it is that he left a kli, a receptacle underneath the nair to catch the tift of the shemen amitaftev. Is there hayolo? Is there hayolo Reb Shimon lahatir? Kishem shematir es moser hashemen. If let's say the candle goes out, he's allowed to enjoy the benefit of the shemen that's remaining, that didn't burn. How much more so in the case of the shemen amitavtev, which he accepted the kli, he must have already set this up or anticipated this from Erev Shabbos. He has hachana. Yesh lomar, sha'omnam, hoya b'daito, sheyitof min ha-shemen ma'at. He expected that a certain limited volume of shemen would fall out of the nair, would overflow. But Loya B'daita Shifnu and Harbe Kolkach, he didn't expect such an unusual volume of Shemen to come out. Again, I'm not sure exactly why this happened. I don't know if a Malach came and took more Shemen, I don't know. Ashe Royal is stopping men with such a significant volume of Shemen that he would want to use it for his own salad or whatever he uses it for. So why did he put the kli there of Shabbos? That's only because he expected that he would get a small amount of shemen. He wanted to save that shemen. Maybe he'll add shemen, you know, to that amount. But he didn't anticipate a massive amount of shemen which actually came out of the...
Someone shook the table now. I mean, like that, and more shemen came out.
Right. Somebody shook the table.
He's splitting his.
I called it a malach, but you called it somebody. All right.
I'm thinking my kiddush cover.
Yeah, right. Yeah, kids come. Yeah. Okay. Then we have Avalkosu Karu Vashoshis, Lo Yazizem Mimkomo, Maishnahani. Why are these different, these larger receptacles? Omar Ula is Seifa Ason L'Rabbi Yehuda. That this line is not a continuation of Rab Shimon, but rather this is going back to Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda holds like that there's mukta, like in the case of a Ner Yashan. And therefore, Rabbi Yehuda would say that that is mukhs in the case of Ashishas. So maskifle marzutra yochi my avol. It says over here avol kos karavashoshis. It means that this is different. According to Rabbi Yehuda, this is an extension of the general rule of Muksa. Rabbi Shimon. We're really going back to say what we thought at the beginning, that this is a hemshech of Rabbi Shimon. When does Rabbi Shimon say that you're allowed to move the ner? That's only the ner zuta. If there's a very limited amount or volume of shemen in the ner, but the daite iluya already on Erev Shabbos, he had in mind that at some point the ner is going to go out and he's going to be left with a significant amount of shemen. Avolhani, but in these cases of a coast karav ashoshes, the nefishi puts in a massive amount of what? Of oil. And therefore he anticipates that this will last through the entire Shabbos. Lo, he had no achana whatsoever. So you see, Rav Osai, this is very exciting, that Rabbi Shimon doesn't disagree with primary principles, and the primary principle is what? Ve'chinu es asher yaviu. Rashi holds that's a doraisa. And Rabbi Shimon is saying that we always have to analyze his mindset. Does he anticipate? Does he not anticipate? There has to be achana, but in certain cases there is achana, even if it's a little bit, shall we say, far-fetched, but he has achana. But it comes to a point where he does an action to set it up in such a way that it won't be mukhan, it'll be dolek the entire Shabbos. He takes a large receptacle, then there's no achana, and even Rav Shimon agrees to mukhan. So that's why I always say to you that when we use the phrase Rav Shimon lesle mukhan, we have to be very careful about that. It really means that he has a lot of coolness in Muktzah, but it doesn't mean that he rejects Muktzah entirely. Again, we still have to deal with the question, how's Rav Shimon going to do away with Migu? And the answer is going to be that he anticipates the possibility on Erev Shabbos that the Muktzah will be removed, that somebody will come along and take the Malos off the Mita. Now the Gemara has to cash from another Bryce. So Vatani, we have another Bryce that says, Moser Shemin Shebenev Shebekara or Sur Rav Shimon Matir. It means Rav Shimon is matir even in the case of Kara. So the Gemara says there are two categories of Kara. He says, Hasa b'kara dumya d'ner. There the word Kara appears together with the word Ner. Ner is always indicative of a very limited volume of oil, and also the Kara had a limited volume of oil, and therefore he anticipated that it would go out during Shabbos. But Hacha, our brice that we began with here, is b'kara dumya d'kos. There we're talking about a kara gedola, a much larger kara. And I'll end with footnote number chaf. And he says the following. Af Rabbi Shimon, sha'omer she'ein omrim v'dover mukta machmas isuro migu diskatzol ben hashmos diskatzol kol yomo lo omer ze elo v'dover she'erev Shabbos ha'yodua she'bemesha ha'yodeh she'mesha Shabbos yigmar isuro. When do we say that Rabbi Shimon rejects migu? That's because on Erev Shabbos he already anticipated that during the course of Shabbos the Isur would be terminated. And Rav Shimon holds that since on Erev Shabbos b'daito l'stafik me'el sheyichpe, he already anticipates that it'll be kavui. Therefore Rav Shimon rejects migu. Avo b'dor shever Shabbos chashem b'daito she'isuri moshe kol Shabbos, that the Isur, as a result of the fact that it's lit, is going to continue during the entire balance of Shabbos. But Kara Mikra, some strange event happened out of left field, unanticipated, that it went out, a wind came and blew out the candle, this Ashoshis on the coast, is Afu Moda. In such a case, even Rav Shimon is Moda. Why? Because Rav Shimon also requires Hachon, and this was not Mukhan. And therefore it's Muktzah V'eini Suzem Yishu Migu. This has nothing to do with some new, brand new Aloch of Migu, but rather because on Erev Shabbos, he siach daitu v'menu l'chol HaShabbos, he put it out of his mind for the entire Shabbos, al-kem kos gedola, kem in shedaito sheyidole kol HaShabbos, we assume it'll be lit for the entire Shabbos, is even though the wind came and blew it out, hu omeid b'isura. This footnote, number chaf, should be photocopied and enlarged by tenfold, and it should be put up on the wall, because this footnote really tells it all. The difference between Rav Yehuda and Rav Shimon is, when do we assume he anticipated on Erev Yontif that the situation was on Erev Shabbos that the situation would change, Was there achana? Was there not achana? Rabbi Yehuda says he didn't anticipate. There's no achana. Rabbi Shimon says he anticipates, unless he went out of his way to put it in a situation, create a situation where he obviously demonstrates that he does not want it to happen. He doesn't want it to go out. So Rabbi Bosai, what would you say? Now I'm testing you, quizzing you, about Grover's Vitzimukin. A wind came and blew his grogros down from the roof. And now the question is, can he eat those grogros? What would Rav Shimon say?
No.
No, for sure not. Because again, what did he do on Erev Shabbos with these grogros?
He put them up on the roof.
He put them up on the roof. He went ahead and made a statement. You know, everything is innocent until proven guilty, but he has proven guilty. He made a statement, I'm not gonna use this, this is gonna be very bitter and you know, over the course of, you know, where the heat beats down on you. Tamar d'Iska is already different. In Tamar d'Iska, you know, he has certain dates that he wants to market. He didn't do something radical to make the dates inedible. And therefore, he didn't totally put it out of his mind. If you were to ask my friend, what happens if, he would have said, yeah, I'll go into my storehouse and I'll take out some of the dates. Same thing in the case of a nair. If it's a limited amount of oil, he anticipated the possibility that he'll get some oil, he'll be able to use the nair, and therefore there was hachon. But in the case of a massive volume, he doesn't anticipate that. That's footnote number chav. That should be copied for all to have.
If you want to say that muksa is deraisa, do you have to put into one of the 39 categories of malachos? Is this the 40th category, or has nothing to do with malachos?
So let me give you three examples of Isuri Shabbos that are not malachos.
That are
doraisa.
Yeah.
Number one, Rabbi Akiva's sheet is that tchumen is doraisa.
Okay.
And that's not a malach. For example, on Yontif there is no tchumen, even according to Rabbi Akiva. There's one mandiyot we don't pass like this who holds havara is also on Shabbos as a lav. That's called havara l'lav yotzus. So if you light a fire on Shabbos or Yontif, you violate an Isur lav, you get malchus, but it's not a malacha. And that mandiyot has to take out havara from the Mishnah and put in another malacha, which is interesting which malacha he puts in. And then we have something called mechamer. Mechamer means where I put a load on an animal's back and I lead the animal. And that comes under a pasuk in Chumash that says, as a pasuk go, can help me here. Ato bincho bitecha, blah, blah, blah. Whatever it says
on Shabbos.
So on Shabbos, the Issur Mechaber is an Issur Doraisa, but it's not a malach. Now, according to Rashi, that's what Dr. Joel's pointing out very well, we can add a fourth Issur. That's also on Shabbos, Doraisa, but it's not a malach, and that's Achilas Mukta. Okay, the Rabbosai, we'll stop here. And tomorrow, once again, we'll try to make progress in the Gemara and at the same time, progress in this overview, because I think the two, you know, work in tandem. Okay?